Hey, good morning, everyone. How are you doing, Catalyst? Do me a favor, before you're seated today, let's take some time, greet those around you, tell them welcome, and you're glad you're in a warm place. Let's do that right now, shall we? All right, let's get seated and we'll get going. Hey, so good to be with you today from a distance. You know, what turned into a 5 to 7 inch forecast ended up being over 15 inches of snow here in St. Louis. We were visiting for Raylan May's 4th birthday, and suddenly we find out we're not going to be able to get home. Parts of the interstate had been closed and shut down because of accidents. We heard there were over 300 just in the portion across Illinois. So it was more timely for us to do this. So I really appreciate everybody on the tech side making this happen. Hey, listen, I just want to remind you, I know a couple of things were announced, but you know what? If you haven't been baptized, we want to make certain that you follow through on that. If you've recommitted your life to Christ, if you made a decision for Christ, we want to make sure that you're able to fulfill that. So on February 3rd, go ahead, call somebody, let somebody know, fill out a card today, and we can respond to you so you can go through the class. Second thing is just a reminder of the prayer focus. Boy, Jason's done a great job, Jason Varner, of putting together. All you have to do is watch for the upload, the eBurst on our site, and you can download and use it for you, not only you, but your family. And it's really, really a powerful thing. So I want to encourage you to do that. Okay, listen, let's continue today in our footprints for Catalyst. Remember last week, we talked about the importance, if you will, of small groups. And the reason that we do that is because we realize we have to break our flock down into the smaller flocks. And so for us to do that, we want to make certain of some things. Number one, that we are building connecting relationships in this community. Now, I'm going to come back to that because I want to talk about that today. But the other thing that we want to do is we want to make certain that our small groups are involved in ministry in the community, that we're engaged in some way outside the walls of the houses, and that we are caring for this community in some way. And finally, we just want these small groups to be a place where every person, I mean, every person has care and compassion and encouragement in their lives. Now, we've heard from some people even this week who have told us how much the small groups have meant to them. And so it's really a powerful thing. But one of the most important things, and this is what I want to focus on today, one of the most important things, Catalyst, that we can do to help expand and grow the kingdom is that you and I will just simply build relationships with people for the cause of Jesus. Now, what I want to share with you is that that's going to be literally the cornerstone of Catalyst, because there is no more powerful way to impact and influence our community than by you and me building relationships that can be utilized to literally help grow the kingdom of God. In fact, there is one component of our discipleship material. We believe in this so strongly that we wrote an entire section. It's just called Building Bridges. And I was sharing with Nate Bowers and Ellen this week that I believe in the importance of it so much that every time it's taught, I really want to be one of the ones to help lead it, not because I'm so good at it, but because I'm so passionate that this has to be one of the things that we do exceptionally well. And I promise you this, Catalyst, if we will do this, you and I will have a profound impact on our community for the cause of Christ. And please know, there's nothing superhuman that we have to accomplish. There's no exotic place that we have to travel. You and I just have to learn to be ourselves wherever God has placed us and allow him to use us to build relationships for him. Now, I want to just simply go through a passage today, 1 Thessalonians, the 2nd chapter, verses 1 through 6. And I want to pass through it today in a simple way. I just want us to ask ourselves three questions in determining these relationships in our lives. And let's just begin with the first one. How have our lives influenced another life for Jesus? If I had to say it another way, I would say this. How has my life touched another life in such a way that something lasting and something good and something of an eternal difference was accomplished through the power of Christ? Now, I want to share with you some ways that Paul evaluated this. And Paul, in some ways, answers his own question. Listen to what he says in verse 1. He simply addresses the Thessalonians, and he says this word, these words, "You yourself know." Now, he's speaking to them because Paul recognizes something. He recognizes that the answer to this question will always be found in the lives of others. You see, the Thessalonians themselves were the proof of the power of the gospel that Paul's life represented. Three times in the first six verses of this passage, Paul tells them, "You know." He's literally reminding them and himself that they are living proof of the credibility and the effectiveness and the transformational power of the story of Christ. And I want to tell you something. What we have to understand is that how you and I invest and care for others will always determine the impact of our lives. Let me share with you a story. And this is a story that has both sadness and really fondness in it. It was on a day that I had to do two memorial services in one day. The first one literally was for one of the richest men in our whole area. In fact, the story was told that he owned so much land that he didn't even remember all the parcels of land that he owned across America. We walked into this place, and I will never forget, for Ellen and me, it was one of the saddest events that we had ever attended. His family sat on both sides of the chapel, and no one spoke to each other. They had gotten into the business, if you will, of going through the legalese aspect of the wills and the estate, and suddenly business took over relationships. I want you to know something. They had learned well. I will never forget the emotional and relational coldness of that day. That service was just a stark reminder to me that this was a man whose life was but a shell, a man who had not invested in other people, but only himself. He had used up friendships, even family members, to the place that no one cared that day. No one. And they weren't even on speaking terms if they did. So we end that service, and Ellen and I are driving to the second one. And I've got to be honest with you, we're talking about, I wonder what will await us at this service that we're going to. Because this man was not a land baron at all. He was a small farmer. And when I mean small, he had about 40 acres that he farmed. And to subsidize his income, he drove a school bus for over 30 years. We drive into the parking lot, and I cannot even tell you, because this was a large parking lot. It was almost filled. We walked into the sanctuary that day where the memorial service was going to be held, and there was his family, this huge gathering of people, and they were just almost arm locked with one another, caring for each other, laughing with each other, crying with each other, telling stories of their childhood. And cousins were there, and aunts and uncles were there. It was all this extended family. And then what amazed me the most was that there were former students who had ridden his bus over 30 years ago, and they were lined up talking to the family, telling them of the events, the moments, that his wife would bake them cookies on their birthdays, or he would ask how an exam went, or he would tell them, "I've been praying for you, I will continue to." And there he was with all these people gathered around him, tears in their eyes, joy in their faces. It was one of the most powerful moments I can remember. And I just marveled at the differences of the two services. Please hear me. That first service, it reflected a man who had everything in a material sense. And yet in a deeper sense, he had nothing. The second memorial reflected a gentleman who, in a material sense, had very little, but in a greater fulfilling sense, he had everything. And he had it because he had invested in other people. He had cared for other people. Friends, I want you to hear me say something. Please know at the end of your life, the impact of your life will never be determined by your station in life. It will always be determined by how you and I have invested and cared for other people. If you and I want to have an impact as a congregation, you and I must come to an understanding. We must come to an understanding that we can answer the question of our life by saying, you know, to people that we have invested in and cared for and loved sometimes beyond reason. It is that that will determine always the impact of an individual's life. There's a second question. It's not how has your life influenced another, but it's this. How have we shared our story? Now, please understand, for Paul, the story of Jesus was not a weak one or a shallow one. It was not trivial. It was not trite. You see, his own personal story of redemption was so powerful that he knew it could only be accomplished by a powerful God. Listen to what he says in verse 2. He says, yet our God gave us the courage to declare his good news to you. And notice what he says, boldly, in spite of great opposition. Now, the word courage here has a twofold meaning. First, it means that we have the courage to share about something and overcome the fear necessary to be able to share it. But it also means something else. It means not only that we have the courage to share the message, but it means that we have the confidence in the message to share it, even, he says, in spite of opposition. You see, the truth is, let's kind of break this down and make this applicable to you and me, if you will. The truth of the matter is, we understand that the story of Christ has changed our lives. But honestly, if we're honest, most of us have some fear and trepidation in sharing that story with other people, no matter how much impact it's had on our lives. Sometimes we have to overcome our fear. Sometimes we have to overcome our lack of confidence. Sometimes our low self-esteem. Sometimes our fear of not having all the answers in order to what we think to be ready to share it. You see, like Paul, there's something that you and I have to take a hold of as a people of God. And it is that you and I have to come to some point that we have confidence in the message and story of the redeeming power of Christ in order to say, God, I'm going to step forward. I'm going to ask your strength to cover me, and I'm going to share boldly what Christ has done for me. Now, notice in verse 2, this text says, Paul writes his good news. Now, he does that because he's telling us something. Friends, this is not our story. This is God's story written in us. It's not of human origin. It's not developed by a woman or a man. It is the story of God's design and his desire for all of humankind. Paul is so confident in it, in the depth of it, in the power of it to literally change and transform a life that he later writes in Romans 1:16. He said, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. And this is a huge point for us. He said, I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation for everyone who believes. You see, he believed in that truth with great conviction. He believed in it enough that he had the courage and the confidence to share the story with others. At some point, friends, at some point, as we grow in our faith, and that's one of the critical components of discipleship, we talk about this all the time, is to give us a conversational notion of our faith. But at some moment, you can have all the conversational notion you want, but at some moment, you and I have to have the courage to boldly speak for Christ because we are confident in the message of Christ. Paul and his ministry had that kind of power. You see, I love Acts 3, where we meet Peter and John outside the temple, and there is a beggar, a man who is broken, a man who has infirmities, and he's begging for alms as he has been probably for years. It's the only source of income that he could have. And he speaks to Peter and John, and Peter just turns and he says these words. First, he says, look at me. Peter wants him to know this is a serious matter. He says, look at me. Silver and gold I do not have. But listen to his phrase. But what I do have, I give you. In the name of Jesus, get up and walk. It's at that moment that the text says that Peter reached down and took his hand and helped him up. And the man began to jump because he had been healed in the story of Christ. Oh, my friends, if there's anything that you and I can get motivated by, let's you and me get motivated by the power of the story of Jesus that has the capacity to transform a life, change a life, bring life to a life. There's something powerful about that. Okay, let's go to the final question. What are our real intentions in sharing the gospel? Another way that we might want to say, are we genuine? Are you and I sincere in the relationships that we build? Paul says in verse 3, he says, so you can see we were not preaching with any deceit or impure motives or trickery. Now, Paul is telling you and me that these relationships for the good news have to be built on character and integrity. But notice he gives us some examples. He says this has to be done without deceit. Another word for that is error. The words mean to be deceptive in our presentation. Was it done with realness? Or was it done with a pretense? Let me give you an illustration for this one. That would be for me on Sunday morning to declare that anybody that receives the gospel will always be successful in every endeavor, and we will never have struggles in our lives. My friends, that would be sharing the gospel in error and deception. Second, Paul says, we don't do this with impure motives. Now, this is a really unique phrase in the Greek, and it means that our motive has a sexual immorality to it. It means that we use one's position of spiritual standing, if you will, to coerce or manipulate a situation that can be used in a sexual manner. Now, that's an illustration of this would be a counseling situation where there is someone broken coming into our office, and we use that brokenness, if you will, in order to lure them or coerce them into a sexual relationship. Paul says, listen, this has nothing to do with what we are in the church. And third, he says, we don't do this with trickery or guile. These words are kind of unusual. They mean to catch a fish without using any bait. But here it means to catch another person in a trap for your own benefit. It means to exploit your position for personal gain or favors. Now, an illustration could be a person guides or directs another person spiritually, but the real order of their intent is to obtain some kind of favor or benefit from them. In fact, I asked a gentleman one day, I'll never forget a conversation. There was a gentleman who had come to the church, and I was just having a passing by conversation. And I said, so tell me, what drew you here? He said, well, to be honest with you, the size of your congregation I know gives me more potential for clients. And I thought to myself, you want to know about fishing without bait? This is what it means right there. And finally, Paul says, we don't mislead with flattery. Now, this is when we use words to manipulate another person, or we say nice things to benefit a relationship. Now, I tell you at the core, and let me share this and give a broad perspective of it. At their core, I think you and I could be susceptible to any of these methods in our humanness, especially if our intentions are wrong. But in response, notice what Paul says in verse 4, because he gives us a plumb line. He says, for we speak as messengers approved by God to be entrusted with the good news. Now, in the NIV, he preempts that by even saying this, on the contrary, noting that the exact opposite of all these things should be true for us. Our methods are never to be deceitful, never with impure intentions, and never to be self-serving in any way. Paul says we are approved by God. The word means that we've been tested, that we've been tried, that we have been improved. If in some ways it means that there's a deeper look into our hearts, it's almost like a doctor who has the capacity, if you know, to do a heart cath and to go into the inner workings of their heart and see if there's any blockage or some place or another that's not the purity with which it was intended to be built. You know, this past Monday morning, I want you to know, as you can tell on my ear, I had some, I went in for what I thought was a simple procedure. I had what is called a basal cell carcinoma. Now, for those of us who have had some skin cancers, we understand that if you're going to have one, this is the one to have. but you still have to do something with it. And I should have known, to be honest with you, I should have known that this was going to be a little more in depth than any I had had before, because when the doctor first saw it, and we thought it was nothing, Ella and I said, Ella, I've had a few bumps to come up on my ear. And she said, well, Rollin, why don't you just ask him? It doesn't look like anything. I mean, the moment that my doctor sees it, she says, Rollin, we need to biopsy this immediately. And she said, I have a feeling it's not going to come back the way you and I want it to. So please know right now that for when you have this worked on, I'm going to have to send you to a plastic surgeon, because it's a little more in depth than I can get into here. Now, I want you to know, I knew things were, on Monday morning we went in and I felt like this first cut that he made was pretty standard. I thought, okay, good. They're just going to, you know, remove this little spot and we're going to be able to move ahead here. And then I came back in, and after they got the initial report, he said, Mr. Daniels, this thing has spread some. And he said, we're going to have to enlarge the scope a little bit. So if you don't mind, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to allow her to give you more shots to numb it. And then he proceeded to take out his little felt tip pen. And he began to, if you will, mark the region around my ear. And what I thought was just going to be a weekend excursion now became a safari to Africa in the region that it covered. I mean, the reality was that suddenly I knew that these things were getting serious. And then when he returned, I noticed out of the acute and wide-eyed open that I had that he grabbed the big pair of scissors. And with one fell swoop, I hear crunch, crackle, and pop in one swoop. And I thought, oh, Lord Jesus, things have picked up in this little room. And then after the final lab report came back clear, and they were able to look at me and say, I want you to know, we got all the cancer. Then the doctor and the nurse who were closing the incision, both, it was so funny because he had cut such a gap, if you will, in the front, into my cheekbone, that they both had to take both their hands and pull the skin together in order for them to be able to sew it up. So I'm sitting like this, and the nurse so very graciously explained to me, don't worry, as you get older, your skin stretches. We'll close this just fine. And I thanked her for encouraging words to end on. You know, this all happened. And you know I'm being pretty facetious, but it wasn't that facetious that morning. These people knew their stuff. I was grateful that my doctor said, go here. But here's the truth. That doctor didn't know what he was dealing with until he got in and he saw what the issues were. Friends, I want you to know something. God wants to get in to our hearts. God desires to know us that intimately. He desires to know us that intricately. And one of the reasons is because of this. God has entrusted, listen to the word, God has entrusted you and me with his good news. You see, the word means that God has given us a privilege. He has given us a rare gift. And Paul's instruction to us is that you and I, in like kind, need to respond in the rare and privileged way of sharing this amazing gift of Jesus. In closing, I want to say something that we said from the beginning of our time, even at Catalyst. We have said that these relationships just have to be built on kindness, on concern, and care for others. We have said from the get-go that these relationships have to be genuinely organic, real, authentic. We have to share with people that we don't have all the answers, that we don't have it all together, that we too have some issues and some struggles. But this is the truth. We love this man, Jesus, with all our hearts. And we recognize without doubt that we are only redeemed by his grace. You see, friends, our neighborhoods, our workplaces, our community connections are these right fields for us to sow the seeds of the gospel. This role of being a neighbor and a friend is just you and me simply living out life every day. It's just simply about being ourselves. And it is amazing. It is amazing what will happen if we can trust God enough as He's trusted us to share His story. I promise you this. I promise you this, Catalyst. If we will do this by building genuine and real relationships, God will supernaturally touch that, and we will see lives transformed because of it. This has been God's way since His Son Jesus came to this earth, and I promise you it continues today. Our future as a congregation will be determined in so many ways by how well we do this or how poorly we do this. But you and I must begin to connect with people for the cause of Christ, not in any manipulation, just to love them sincerely, to care for them deeply, to encourage them regularly, and to be